I don't think we even need an agenda. If we see Donna and Michelle both online, we know what's coming up on the agenda.
That's right. And I have 3:30, so we will call this meeting of the Des Moines Water Works Finance and Audit Committee committee to order. Ted, I'll let you take it away with item one, corporate insurance renewals.
Thank you, Joel. As you mentioned, we do have a full agenda today. The first item on the agenda is actually something we had hoped to cover last week at planning, but we just weren't able to get all of the information we needed for our corporate insurance renewals, but we're ready to go today. Donna Heckman is going to present some information on corporate insurance, and then Jack Cara from Assured Partners is also here to answer questions and provide some comments and context after Donna walks us through. So Donna, please.
Thanks, Ted. Get my screen shared here. All right, so you guys are, we're gonna jump right into corporate insurance renewal. Since the beginning of July, I've been working pretty closely with Assured Partners and their staff, putting together applications on our 11-1 renewal. As Ted said, Jack is here and he'll jump in at the end to kind of go over some where we are today with some of our follow-up quotes and any questions you may have at that point.
Before you continue, I'm seeing your notes screen and the whole thing. Can you switch the display?
I thought I had. Okay, hang on. Let me try that again. Thanks, Ted.
Yep.
Oh, there we go. I think.
I was using it as a test for Donna, Ted.
Now do you see? Now are we good?
I don't see anything now.
Yeah, I don't either.
User error. Okay, let's try this again. Now we're good?
Yes.
Looking good.
Perfect. Okay. Since 2019, Cincinnati has been our lead carrier on the majority of our plans, our property and casualty policies. In the beginning, they offered us very competitive pricing over a three-year term. We're at the end of that term, and so now we have new pricing from them. One of the biggest issues on the 2023 renewal involves a large claim that happened downtown on a water main break at the beginning of 2022. We'll get into more of that detail in a bit, and Jack will follow up as well. I'm going to spend the next few minutes highlighting some of our policies that were also impacted for the 2023 renewal. So first, we're going to talk about property and casualty as a whole. Property, really not much of a change here. The renewal itself is flat, just like in years past where we see an increase as we increase our property limits on a yearly basis. And so that's where we see the increase in premium there. Our equipment policy ties right into the property. One change we'll see on this line is that the renewal itself is flat again, but historically, Assured has requested that our equipment limit be the same as our property limit. And in 2023, our property limit is $433 million. Cincinnati pushed back on this and won't insure us for that level, but it will insure us at $100 million. You'll notice that the premium doesn't change in 2023, but because we also don't have equipment much above that $100 million limit, we also really aren't going to see an impact in our coverage either. So that's a pretty important piece of knowledge right there to keep in mind. The next policy that we have is our inland marine policy. I just want to point out that I feel like this is insurance's fancy name for equipment used on land. Every year we have a conversation about what exactly is inland marine. It's going to be our backloaders and things like that. That's the high dollar equipment that we have. Once again, the only changes in this policy is the fact that the equipment changes on a year-to-year basis. And so that's where the price of the policy changes. Same with our automobile policy. We change our number of units. Number of units generally stays the same. We did actually increase one unit in 2023, but the value of the units that we are buying obviously are much higher today than say they were even 5 years ago. So that's where the change occurs on that policy as well. Next, we're going to move into the general liability side of property and casualty. As I said before, this is the major point of contention in our 2023 renewal because of that claim downtown. As of now, that total claim is probably right around $1.3 million. The first million of that was paid by Cincinnati, and that claim is still open. That has directly impacted how the 2023 renewal is going to look. The actual premium with Cincinnati stayed the same. Where they're trying to impact our coverage comes in the deductible. They're raising our deductible from $25,000 to $100,000 per occurrence. To kind of give you a guess, we have about 20 to 50 smaller claims a year that really never hit that $25,000. But on average, the last 3 years, we've seen one claim a year go over that 25. So we anticipate to kind of see at least a $75,000 spike in that deductible that we would have to pay out on a yearly basis. Now, if we don't have any high deductible or high losses, we wouldn't see that additional $75,000. With this increase in deductible, it prompted us to go back to Assured Partners and ask them to go back to the market to see if we can get different pricing and comparable coverage from other carriers in the market. So I think Jack will hopefully have an update for us on that at the end of this presentation. So in general, if we don't change anything, if we stick with Cincinnati as our primary carrier here, we're seeing a 3% increase over 2022. So from the 604,000 to 624,000. Now, keeping in mind, we could have an additional $75,000 if we have any large claims. One of the other areas of impact because of that large claim downtown comes across to us in our umbrella liability coverage. Historically, Des Moines Water Works has had $50 million in coverage across three individual layers. I went back and did a comparison over a number of years, but specifically over the last 5 years, we've seen an increase from $191,000 a year to last year we paid over $390,000. That's 104% increase in that $50 million coverage. Because of that, we asked once again Assured Partners to go out and find us some benchmarking on where we think we could possibly land for this coverage. They went to Advisen, which is a casualty insurance data expert, to come up with some benchmarking for us. As you can see, 56% of similar programs had $5 to $10 million in coverage. I'll point out that no one was anywhere near our $50 million in coverage. We also, Jester Insurance is now partnered with Assured. And they did a benchmarking for us as well. And their largest public entities carry between 12 and 25 million. In my initial memo, we had projected that we would recommend the 25 million, dropping it to 25 million. I was able, however, to get another quote for an additional 5 million, adding 5 million on top of our initial $10 million umbrella coverage, taking us to $15 million. So at this time, we're recommending dropping from $50 to $15 million. The difference between those two, as you see here, is $100,000 a year in premium on this first year. So that's going to be our recommendation going forward, is dropping down to that $15 million in umbrella coverage. Lastly, the two other coverages that were to note for the 2023 renewal was our cyber liability and workers' compensation. Cyber liability, per guidance from our legal, we're not going to talk too much about that, but I can tell you that we maintained the same broker, same carrier that we had last year. And as expected, because of market conditions, our premium went up 32% from $70,000 to $92,000. This is something that we are going to continue to look at. There's lots of conversations in the market of the viability of having this coverage. We still feel like it's even at $92,000 is a coverage that is great for Des Moines Water Works to maintain. Lastly, workers' compensation. As you all know, we are self-insured for workers' compensation. This means we pay out of pocket any claims up to $500,000. We have an excess coverage carrier called Midwest Employers Casualty, and they will pay any claim that breaches that $500,000. The premium for this claim went up from $89,000 to $103,000. They are offering us a two-year pricing guarantee as well for the next 2 years on that. One thing that's new in 2023 for workers' compensation is we are in the final stages of an RFP for a new third-party administrator. Since we are self-insured, this TPA is a very important part of our workers' compensation program, as they work very closely with our HR department in managing our ongoing claims. Other coverages such as directors and officers, fiduciary, flood, all remained flat for the 2023 renewal, which was a good thing for us. In summary, if we stay the course of what we have today and what I just presented, we will increase our premiums 1% over 2022. Right now, our current policies were $1.234 million, and the renewal as it stands right now is $1.245 million. We do have $1.386 in the 2023 budget. So now I'll throw it over to Jack to update us on any new plans that we have.
Thanks, Donna, and good afternoon, everybody. Appreciate you having me on this meeting here. I just kind of wanted to recap a couple things. Donna did a great job of going over all the details on our renewal. You heard me say this on our last call that we had last year. We are still currently in a hard market on the property casualty insurance side. Basically, what that means is pricing's been going up. Terms and conditions have become more restricted, and it's all tied to weather-related claims as well as legal expenses going up, in addition to medical costs, as well as inflationary factors that play into it. So it's been a very rough couple years in the hard market. Right now, we're seeing on increases is roughly 8 to 10% on clean accounts. So when you look at this from an overall perspective, with Des Moines Water Works having an open claim that we have right now at $1.3 million roughly, and the increase looking at it roughly 3%, it actually favored pretty well. As Donna mentioned, the fact that we were imposed a retention by Cincinnati Insurance, increasing it from 25 to 100,000, did take us out to the marketplace. Unfortunately, my update for you guys on ICAP right now is I'm still waiting to get an update. So it is hung up on reinsurance, for what that means for you folks that don't typically work with insurance. Insurance companies buy insurance as well too, to transfer some of the risk. And with the values that we have at Des Moines Water Works, it puts us into the reinsurance market, which basically we have to wait for them to get the pricing to determine eligibility. Nonetheless, I will make sure to update you guys as soon as I have more feedback on that, but I did want to at least touch on that piece of a little bit too. The benchmarking on the umbrella, I think, was very important this year too. I want to stress that umbrellas have not been repriced for quite some time. So during the hard market, there's been some pretty big chunks and increases over this time that have been taken. And partially that's been because it has not been repriced for a good decade. So in the hard market, insurance companies have really swung pretty hard and focused on a few different lines. The umbrella is one, as well as cyber liability. Another thing to note is we did not carry a $50 million umbrella for the entire time that we were Des Moines Water Works. That was something that was purchased up over time. We were actually not the broker at that brief time. But during that time, it was a soft market. And so things were just very competitive. People were purchasing higher terms and conditions because you were getting them pretty inexpensively. So you are not alone in this boat. We are doing a lot of benchmarking these days. Quite frankly, there's a lot of customers that purchase some higher towers that are trying to reduce costs by reevaluating things, doing the benchmarking, seeing where their peers are at, and cutting back limits just to essentially make sure to stay within budget. So I did want to make sure I touched on that. Outside of that, I don't have a whole lot else other than we'll continue to source some options. I think overall, what renewal came in was pretty fair. It's challenging. If we did not have a $1.3 million open claim, we'd have a different situation right now. And quite frankly, we probably wouldn't have the deductible that was imposed on us. But with it open, it makes things a little challenging to market. But hopefully I have an update for Donna and Amy here this week, and we could talk a little further on that piece. But I'm glad to answer any questions, concerns, or general feedback from the group if anyone has any.
Jack, the question that comes to mind for me, as you may imagine, is regarding the umbrella coverage. Considering the significant change in our coverage there, I think I saw it was alluded to that this would perhaps bring us more in line with our peers. Can you or maybe staff speak to that at all?
Yeah, I'm glad to. So Joel, what it comes back to is, I think, and this is not uncommon either, the limit that Des Moines Water Works carries today at this point being $50 million, was something that was purchased at a time when it was just a lot more affordable. You could buy a lot more. It was just a soft market. You could buy essentially double the limit for not even a fraction of, it was like pennies on the dollar comparatively, right? And so at this point in time, with premiums going up as much as they are, when we benchmarked it, we used a couple different sources to benchmark. Advisen is actually the world's largest third-party independent benchmarking outfit. We utilized them and had a very good pool of data within the same size segment on a national scale. Okay, so that's one of the figures. The other piece, as Donna had alluded to, Jester, who's actually an Assured Partners office. Jester, for those of you that are not familiar, they write more public entity business, either directly or indirectly, in the state of Iowa than any other broker. So if you're a municipality, chances are, one way, shape, or form, you know Jester, or you've worked with Jester or currently working with Jester. So I asked my friends over at Jester to help us benchmark based on smaller and larger type municipal risks, which is where we came up with some of the local Iowa data to use as a resource to see how we compare from a limit perspective.
And Ted, I don't want to take too long because I know we have a full agenda, but give me a sense of how comfortable we should be with reducing our umbrella coverage and maybe the brief context on why we had, I guess Jack spoke to it a bit there. Anything else we should know about why, how we got to a point where our coverage was so high and yet we're comfortable reducing it this amount?
Yeah, well, first of all, kind of the second half of your question, how did we get to the point of raising it so high? It was just a question of it was cheap insurance. You know, frankly, we did that with cyber insurance a few years ago. It was really cheap at the time. And so we increased and we, you know, we kind of balanced the cost with the coverage and the risk. And frankly, $50 million of property liability is a huge number. Compared to other entities like ours, but if it's cheap insurance, it's cheap insurance, you know. So we raised it. I can't say that I was involved in that particular decision making, but that's the bottom line: is that it was very cost effective to do that, and so we did. Now at this point, is with all of the happenings that Jack described with the catastrophic weather and premiums going up, we need to take a harder look at what we really need and just benchmarking with other comparable sized utilities and municipalities. You know, we think that $15 million number is an appropriate number. Does that mean that there's no possible chance that there'll be a situation where that's enough? You know, it doesn't mean that. It could happen, but we don't think it will. And given where everybody else is, we think that's a good place to be.
Okay. Any other questions from other board members? Hearing none, is that, Ted, is that the conclusion of item one, or do we have more here?
No, that's it. If there are no other questions from the board, Joel, I think we can move on to the next item on the agenda.
Sounds good. Let's do that.
Actually, we're going to move on to the next two items on the agenda. Amy Kaler is going to walk us through both the cost of service study that we completed this year and then the proposed rates that we are going to recommend based on that cost of service. So Amy, take it away.
Thank you. And before I segue into that topic, I do just want to recognize Jack and Donna both for all the work that they do on corporate insurance. As they mentioned, we sent them back to the market a couple times, and we're well served by AssuredPartner. So appreciate that. And keeping the accolades going, although I'm talking about cost of service, Donna is the one who is the Oz behind the curtain. So she spends a lot of time during our budget process cranking through all the calculations. And I certainly want to recognize all the effort that she puts into it. As Ted mentioned, I'm going to talk about cost of service and proposed water rates together. I think they dovetail very nicely. It's hard to talk about one, frankly, without talking about the other. So we're marrying them in this presentation. The cost of service is about a 40-page report. And in the interest of time, I think you'll be relieved to know that I'm not going to walk through all 40 pages. But as you read through there, certainly let me know if you have questions, and we can review it with you one-on-one. But I do want to just highlight some of the summary points. And what I think is really important for you to know today is that we have been doing a cost of service for literally decades. But about 5 years ago, we did, you might recall, procure Raftellus to help us develop an updated and more modern model. Raftellus is a leader in the municipal rate space. And again, I think that we've been well served by Raftellus. They have really helped us develop a model that is very strong. The cost of service identifies our revenue requirements based on the budget of 2023. So one of the changes that we took on a couple years ago when Raftellus came on board to help us was we were looking backwards, and they said, you know, that's really not the way you do it. You want to take your budgeted expenses in the future and really look at the budget expenses. And so this cost of service that we are presenting today, the revenue requirements are based on a future period, the 2023 budgeted expenses, which again will dovetail into what Michelle is going to talk about after me. And the cost of service then takes the costs and it distributes those costs based on generally accepted industry allocation and rate making principles, and it distributes those costs to our various customer classes. And so the cost of service is used as a guide. Then once we know the cost by service, we can determine, use that as a guide to determine what the rates should be for each customer class. So that's why they're so closely related. Look at one page of the cost of service, or if you dog ear one page of the cost of service, I would ask that it be this page. It's figure 14 in that report. This table is really a culmination of all of the calculations and the numbers behind the scenes, all the mechanical gyrations. It's a snapshot of the study. And what it does is it shows the cost to serve each of our four customer classes. So our customer classes are retail, full service, wholesale purchase capacity, PC stands for purchase capacity, and the wholesale with storage class.
Hey, Amy. Yeah. Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt.
I'm not sharing.
Are you sharing your screen, or you have?
Thank you.
Yes.
Can you see it now?
Yes. I muted myself before I said yes, but yes, now muting.
Thank you, Michelle. It will make more sense when you can see. So our goal then is to collect revenue from each customer class equal to the cost to serve that class, such that each customer class is paying their own way and one group is not subsidizing another. We talk a lot about that, frankly, and our contracts require that we not allow cross-subsidization between the classes. This table also includes the proposed April 1st rates. So we're going to load that in there so that you can see the ending result of how much of the costs would be recovered at that particular rate. So this last column is where we really want to focus our attention because it's the revenue that would be collected at these assumed rates, which I'll come back to in just a minute. So our perfect world goal then is for each of these percentages in the last column, especially in the totals, to be 100%. I've highlighted a few of these key results that you probably are interested in because we've talked about them a lot in the past and prior years. The first one is Des Moines Inside City is at 98% cost recovery. That's a good position. It's not exactly 100%, but within reason, it's a great position. Another class that we've talked a lot about before is the wholesale purchase capacity class. They're near the bottom. They're at 96%. That's also a good position. And lastly, the wholesale with storage, the very bottom highlighted number, they're at 102%, slightly over recovered, but still very close to our goal. And I thought it might be helpful to give you some context about where we've been so that we could frankly understand that we have made some progress. We were out of alignment, you might recall, in these three classes. For the last 5 years, we've recognized that we have been out of alignment. We've been trying to better align them and true them up. So the Des Moines Inside City class in 2020, when we started looking at this, was at 109%. So they were over-recovering, paying too much. And again, today, with the cost of service that we're presenting and the rate recommendation that we're making, they're at 98%. So we have brought them really closely in line to that 100%. The wholesale purchase capacity was at a mere 80% of cost recovery. And with some of the rate adjustments that we have made in that class today, they with the 2023 budget, we're looking at a 96% recovery. And then the wholesale with storage, they were over recovering at 126%. And with these adjustments that we've made, we've brought them more closely in line at 102%. So when you compare these results, you can see that we've made significant progress, but frankly, it wasn't painless because in order to make this progress, we had to frankly raise rates for the wholesale purchase capacity class. For the last 2 years, we've raised their rates 15%. And it was the right thing to do. But again, as I said, it wasn't painless, frankly. And we did hear about it from those customers. But what was important is that we had a 3-year implementation plan and we told the customers, our purchase capacity customers, what we were projecting and what they could expect. And we in that regard. And after those 3 years, as I mentioned, we're very much in line.
Amy, could I ask a question on the previous slide? Let's see, if we go back and, you know, I know we've tried to get everyone in line. And I think the other thing that we found through regionalization, if we look at Altoona, you know, because they are not really Bindwater, that's a tough one when it's 40%. And yet I see we're only projecting a 10% increase there. Would there be any kind of thought to getting that up to the point that they would understand that they need to start to purchase water and we can't just hold that reserve for them?
Yeah, I mean, that's a conversation that we have had a lot of. It's the, again, these are set by customer class. These rate recommendations that we have made are consistent with our current wholesale rate structure. And so you might recall in the past, we've talked a lot, probably the last couple of years at least, about changing that wholesale rate structure such that it wouldn't just be the class that is at 100%, but we would be looking for more equity within the class. Altoona being the one that stands out the most, but there are others like West Des Moines, Polk City that also stand out as being low there. And in order to look for equity within that class, we would have to change that wholesale rate structure. And what that would look like is a volume rate like we charge today, but then also a significant monthly fixed fee that would be based on their maximum day demand. So we talked about that a lot last year. We did not pull the trigger on that because, frankly, it was disruptive to regionalization efforts. Right. So we are, you know, even closer this year to regionalizing. And the intent is for the 2080, the Central Iowa Water Works 2080, to be signed by the time that these rates would be effective on April 1st. So the staff recommendation is, you know, just to hang out a little bit longer here at this current wholesale rate structure, thinking that, you know, the next rate cycle we will know for sure. And these wholesale rates then, once we regionalize, really become irrelevant. We won't have these wholesale rates. They would be CIWWs.
Great point. Thank you.
Great question. Because that is something that I want the board to understand is that this rate recommendation is holding status quo, and we have had a lot of discussion about not. So this would be the time to correct us if you wish to go a different direction. So just summarizing, I guess, here while I'm back on this page, the most of the retail rates were recommending a 5.5% rate increase. Other than for Berwick, which is a full service customer, you know, we are, unlike the wholesale purchase capacity, we are setting individual rates for each of these individual first full service areas. And Berwick stands out as being the lowest. And so we're really trying to increase them to get closer to cost of service recovery. They do have their own funds set aside that if we ran into a capital improvement that we needed to make that we were not collecting in the rates, they, you know, have indicated that they have that money set aside. So it's not urgent, but we do want to make sure that we're making progress to get to that 100%. So 5.5 for most retail customers. The Des Moines Outside City is another customer group that is a little bit low here. These have such few customers. You can see the impact here. We're talking $2 million, $1 million in revenue. Even if we increase the rate 100% or more, it's still not going to have material effects on our overall revenue. So again, we're incrementally getting them, adjusting them. This whole retail class is still at 95%, even though they are alone at 49%. So again, something we're watching, but we believe 10% would be adequate there for this next year. I mentioned 10% for the wholesale customers. The with storage class is still over recovering slightly at 102%. And so we are recommending probably for the final year, a 0% rate increase for them because as I mentioned, they've had several years of over recovery and we just don't feel like a rate adjustment is warranted at this time. The full service customers, you can see a broad range here and they're over collecting based on this figure at 133%. That is by design, frankly, because many of these, as you look through this community list, these are small communities that are facing really, in some cases, pretty explosive growth as a percentage of their community. And so they have a lot of capital needs in order to support that growth. And so what we're trying to do is build up a fund for them so that we can make those capital improvements when we need to. The important part here is, although we are collecting more revenue than the cost of service would imply, we're also squirreling that excess revenue away for each of them in a separate fund. And that money then is set aside specifically for that particular community and will only be spent on improvements in that community. So it's not commingled with anybody else's needs. So that's why this group also looks a little out of kilter. So we're recommending that these rate changes take effect on April 1st, that we maintain our current wholesale rate structure, which recovers most of the cost and that volume charge. The purchase capacity rate then would be $3.39 per 1,000 gallons or a 10% increase. And as I mentioned, the with storage, which mostly affects Johnston, also another wholesale supplier, water development company or Thorpe, their rate would also remain at $4.57 And then they have very small monthly availability fees based on meter size. And we're also recommending that those not increase this year. So I think I've already talked about everything on this slide, so I'll just keep rolling. Rate increases affect family budgets, and we don't want to lose sight of that. 5.5% rate increase in light of 8 or 9% inflation feels moderate, but it still has an impact to families. And so what we like to do is to make sure that we're communicating or evaluating and setting these, what that monthly impact would be at least a couple different usage points. And so we have each of our retail customer classes listed here, what that proposed volume rate increase would be, and then what the impact in dollars is for an average two-person home and an average four-person home. And these are industry standards. So actually our average household uses closer to 4,000 gallons. And so the average user in Des Moines is going to fall more in line with the lower range. So these rate increases will affect our customers in the range of $1 to $2 per month.
Can I ask a question about that? How do we, thinking about that voice of a customer and having there be so much confusion about our rates and also some feeling that our rates are so high, how do we communicate this information to them, or do we with the actual increase being relatively able to deal with, and that, in some of these cases, like you were mentioning, some of those smaller towns that really what you're building up a reserve to be able to take care of them into the future. How do we communicate that? Or do we?
Yeah, that's a great question. For the Des Moines Inside City and the Des Moines customers, we rely on our traditional communication methods, the website, the customer newsletter, our CSRs are prepared to talk about this. Once rates change, generally on April 1st is when we get the questions, but we do proactively communicate it. Related to the other communities that are served, actually Laura and I and others are about to embark on a tour of communities. We meet with all of our full service customers, the city clerk or the city administrator, one-on-one or just a small group, and share with them the balance of their capital fund. We coordinate with them what capital improvements they think they need, what their growth patterns are. And so we're working really closely with those city administrators and city staffs in those full service communities. And then they work with their councils and their residents really to help share that message of here's why your water rates are where they are. Here are the improvements that we've asked Des Moines Water Works to be prepared for.
You know, Amy, this is Diane, and I want to kind of follow up on what Andrea said, where she was going. Do we ever benchmark our rates against other communities in the state? And I ask this because some of you know that I've started, that I have a trailer in my little hometown. The water bill I get there is higher than the water bill I get here that combines all of the other services. So I was shocked at how high water is, and I don't even use any water there. When people say, oh, I think, my bill is high, they do so usually in a vacuum and not understanding what it costs to provide the service, but also what others pay for such a service.
Yes, benchmark. I forget what month it was. I shared some results of our benchmarking, I think with the Finance and Audit Committee, and the statewide results where we were and have been for years below the median water rate. But I don't know, to your point, Diane, that we, have ever communicated that.
Yeah. It's hard to do because you don't want to call out others. But again, right. like I said, people say, oh, it's outrageous. And they're just in a vacuum as to, they don't compare it to anything. They just don't like it.
Right. And you know, no one wants to pay for these types of services, frankly, right? They're not fun for us to pay the water bill as opposed to something that is more fun for our household to engage in every month. So, but I think that's a good comment. And I think we could communicate it without throwing other communities under the bus. You know, we could focus on ourselves and where our position is relative to statewide medians and that sort of thing. So I think that's a good comment for us to consider when we look at the communication of this. Are recommending no change to the availability by meter size. And Diane, you know, you mentioned you have property and you don't even use water and it's still high. That tells me they have a very high availability or a fixed monthly fee. Our fees are very low relative, $6 a month for the average residential customer for a meter fee. We're recommending no change to those availabilities for 2023 and also no change to the capital improvement fees. We talked about it, to be frank, because it has been a while since we have changed the availability fee. But looking forward in 2023, we are going to, we have budgeted to do an affordability assessment, which is checks and balances on these water rates, right? You need the revenue to accomplish what you need to accomplish for the water system to invest. But you also need to make sure that your water is still affordable for especially the most vulnerable populations. And so we are going to do an affordability study next year and also evaluate our retail rate structure to make sure that it is designed to encourage wise use of water, frankly. We have a declining rate block structure. So the more you use, the cheaper the water gets. That design has fallen out of favor. Certainly utilities still use it. It's still a recognized rate design, but we just want to make sure it's still right for us. And so we plan to study that in 2023. And so there may be changes coming to both the availability and the capital improvement fee next year once we do that comprehensive study. That was cost of service and water rates. What questions can I answer?
Again, this is Diane, and I don't have a question. I just have an observation. I'm so happy that we have moved closer. We understand that within classes that there are still disparities, but I think as a whole, we're not making it worse. We are on a path to make it better. And I agree at this time that we don't do any rate design changes, given where we are in regionalization. I really, really appreciate the work and it looks like it's having the intended result.
Yeah.
It definitely is, Diane. And I think it's a testament to Amy and Don and Michelle's work in finance, the hard work they do in cost of service and helping us align this, but it's also congratulations to the board for being willing to not do across the board rate increases. That was not a popular decision when you made it, but it was the right decision and it's got us in a much better place. And frankly, it's got us in a much better place to move into regionalization so that everybody's used to paying their nearly their cost of service, which should make that transition into the uniform wholesale rate easier from my perspective. So I think it's a very positive outcome in a short period of time.
I'm really excited about doing a retail study. Ted and I were talking about the issues of, you know, forward-looking issues of climate change. And I really do think that we're going to have to start looking at how we address water usage and really looking at that retail piece and maybe looking at not only rate structure things, but also what we can do to assist people in their usage.
Yeah.
efficiency kinds of things. There are things that can be done, and that would be a really good move for the future.
Agreed.
Well said. I was also struck by Amy's slide noting the progress. I think that's the one that will stick with me. Getting much closer to our goals there. Unless there are any other comments, we'll say thanks to Amy on items 2 and 3. Great presentation, and move on to item 4, proposed budget.
Yeah, Joel, last on the presentations today, but certainly not least, is the proposed budget, which has been designed in advance of rate setting this year. It's a little bit of a paradigm shift for those of us who have been around for a while, but we did go through the budget and then, you know, right-sized it to the best of our ability and then ran that through the cost of service process. But Michelle Holland is here today to give us an overview of the 2023 budget. Michelle.
Okay, so I have unmuted myself and going to share my screen. Let's see, can everybody hear me?
You on the presentation, Michelle, so.
Pardon me?
We're 0-2 on the slides.
Yeah, okay, here we go. Good luck, right? Okay, can everybody hear me and see my screen?
Third yes. Try is the charm.
Okay, here we go. So I am in the unenviable position to go last on a very heavy agenda. So I cannot promise to be entertaining, but I will do my best to be brief. Within your handouts that you have, that you received is about a 40-page budget memo, very detailed budget memo. And I'm just going to go through the highlights, not go through, as Amy said, not go through every page as the cost of service and not go through every page of the budget. So a couple of reminders, the comparisons to the 2023 budget are to the prior year budget. So all of our comparisons are to the 2022 budget. And I do also want to say that nearly all of the slides in the handout or on this presentation are also in your handout, with the exception of this first slide, which is the balanced budget slide. So that just a reminder, the Des Moines Water Works prepares a balanced budget. What that means is inflows are equal to outflows. On the inflow side, we have the water revenues. We have additional funding that includes capital projects paid for by other entities. We also have capital projects in the 2023 budget that are budgeted to be funded through SRF loans. Within the memo, this is also called Des Moines Water Works debt. So those two are synonymous. And we also have expansion projects that are we expect to be funded through regional participation. That makes up the inflow side. Then on the outflow side, you know, primarily we have the operating and the capital expenses on the outflow side. So really, if you think of these as puzzle pieces, as one piece gets larger, another piece needs to adjust to keep the overall budget in balance. The next slide would be the 2023 budget highlights. And I realize this doesn't display all that well on a large screen. This is actually page 2 in your budget document. And this really is what I would call the page. This really is probably the Reader's Digest version of the budget. That probably dates me, but you know, really the highlights of what we've got going on. And this presentation will really walk through each of these boxes. So the first assumption, or one of the first assumptions that we make within the budget, is the annual pumpage number. And you may recall we did talk about this a few months ago when we talked about the mid-year review, where we were basically in 2022 and how we're stacked up to budget. But we did talk about basically using a 7-year pumpage average to then put into our 2023 budget. And our 2023 budget includes 17.7 billion gallons of pumpage. And this, as I said, would be the average of the last 7 years of pumpage, 2015 through 2021. As a comparison, we budgeted 17.2 billion gallons in 2022. So our budget is increasing the pumpage by 500 million gallons. Got to get my B's and M's good. And so, you know, 2022, the year that we're currently in, you know, we can see we've had some pretty good years these last few years. And I will say 2022 is looking to be fairly close to our 2021 number at about 19.2. So still on target to have another good pumpage year. The pumpage budget drives several things within the overall budget, one of which is revenue. Total revenue is at $85.4 million. Of that, water revenue is nearly $79.1, and that makes up 93% of the revenue budget. Rounding out the revenue budget would be other sales and services. Those are our departmental revenue. Revenue related to billing and collecting services of about $2.2 million. This would be billing and collecting services for City of Des Moines, primarily HomeServe and a few others. And then also we have other revenue, about $1.2 million. That's made up of connection fees, land use income, interest income, a few things like that. Next up, and walking down through the highlights page, is the budgeted staffing. And the 2023 budget does include increase in staffing. As you can see, it's up 4.5, rounding-wise, about 4.5 full-time equivalents, most of which are in the operations groups. So compared to the 2022 budget, engineering is up 1 full-time equivalent, water distribution up 1, water production up 1.5. And then we're actually taking a shared position between the OCEO and the HR department, and we're turning that into 2 full-time positions. So in essence, only a 1 full-time equivalent, but getting each of those departments a full-time staff, which is, I believe, pretty well needed. A lot of work to be done. Continuing through the budget highlights, these next few slides are going to relate to the operating expenses. And currently, the operating budget stands at $58.1 million. That's up about 9.6%. And as you can see, when we see these comparisons of the last few years, that's higher than the last few years. You know, we've tended to be right around that 4.5 to 6% range. But this year we're at 9.6%, maybe a little bit on the alarming side, but we have a few things that really are driving that. This next slide shows that 9.6% increase equates to nearly $5.1 million of expenses, increased expenses. And I'm just gonna touch on a few of the items. As you can see, chemicals is the pretty big outlier, up $3.2 million compared to the 2022 budget. You know, 62% of our increase is made up of this chemical increase. Certainly that pumpage number going up from 17.2 to 17.7 does increase our chemical usage, but primarily this is gonna be expected price increases that we're seeing, you know, as the, you know, as things continue, we're still seeing shortages of raw materials and we're still seeing, you know, some pretty high logistical costs. So pretty good size increase there. Another increase on the operating side, I'm actually combining the labor and benefits. Those are up about $1.1 million. As we discussed, you know, we are increasing staff by a little bit. So we do have more labor hours in the operating projects. And then we also have our the wage rate increase that's loaded in there as well on the wages side. On the benefit side, obviously as labor increases, we do have benefits that are tied to labor, that being like our IBERS, Des Moines Water Works contribution to the IPERS, as well as our deferred comp match and our wonderful FICA taxes that we do pay then to the US government. And then finally, we do have a modest increase in our medical premiums. And then we've also budgeted for $200,000 increase in our Des Moines Water Works pension contribution. And as we all know, it's not been a very good year related to our investment return. So based on some conversations with the principal, we have increased our budget to, I believe it's at $1.7 million in the 2023 budget. Another fairly good size item would be the purchase services line. budgeted to go up about $1.2 million. A few things in here, that's a lot of purchase services that happen within the utility, but we have regionalization expenses. Those are up about $500,000 from $600,000 up to $1.1 million in the 2023 budget. We also have about $360,000 related to strategic plan initiatives. And this includes those consulting services that Amy just talked about for the rate study focusing on affordability and Des Moines Water Works retail rate structure. It also includes expenses related to our diversity, equality, and inclusion programs. Top three increases really are right there. You know, I do want to point out one other outlier to the budget, actually a pretty big favorable budget, the reduction in residual removal expenses. That's actually down pretty close to $1.3 million when looking at budget to budget. This is primarily because it's an off year, I will say, in the cyclical residual removal at McMullen, at the McMullen Water Treatment Plant. And 2023 will be a year where one lagoon is being filled. The other lagoon will be drying. And really the only thing therefore that's included in the 2023 budgets are for removing, I believe it's about 31,000 tons, which would be removed from the drying area to the final disposal site. So, that's really what's going on out at McMullen. That reduction is related to McMullen. And then at Fluor, you know, basically as we produce the water, the residuals are removed. So fairly status quo on the Fluor side of things. And this just shows really a graphical representation of our operating expenses. What it really, you know, kind of highlights labor and benefits, slightly less than half of the operating budget. As you can see, the chemicals expense is a larger piece of the pie this year. And when you take what we would call mainly the treatment expenses of chemicals, residual removal, and utilities, that's nearly a quarter of the operating budget. So, you know, in essence, 75% of our operating budget is made up of the labor benefits and the treatment expenses. So, continuing on that highlights page, the remainder of that highlights page, as well as this presentation, is going to focus on the capital spending for 2023. And currently, our capital budget includes nearly $62.5 million of capital projects. And how this compares would be in 2022, this number was 45.9. So a fairly significant increase in capital projects. And what this does is break down how the projects are funded. So, the top section shows we've identified three projects that are to be funded through SRF loans or Des Moines Water Work debt. Those are synonymous. Those include a new ASR well, design and some partial construction there, initial design costs of the Des Moines River well field, as well as design and a little bit of construction of the CO2 feed system at the Fluor Drive treatment plant. The next section, pretty big numbers on this one, but these are projects funded by regional participation. And these are primarily those expansion projects at the Sailorville Water Treatment Plant. This would include both the source and treatment costs, as well as the necessary feeder mains that need to be built because of that expansion. And I will say these are just initial costs of source and treatment. So don't want anybody in engineering to freak out and think, oh dear, she said it's only going to be 20 million, but it's going to be quite a bit more. And we'll get to that here in a few minutes. Rounding out this slide, we have carryover from the 2022 budget of about $1.3 million. And then we have this funds received from outside entities. We are at a little bit of a lull with the joint projects, you know, the feeder mains and the booster stations that we've constructed in the past few years. But what is included in this funds received from outside entities? First of all, the city of Des Moines has indicated that they are willing to direct a total of $2 million towards water main replacement or alterations for city projects. Of that $2 million that they've indicated they will direct towards it, we have about a million, we have a million five budgeted for 2023. And we also have an additional $500,000, which are our anticipated funds to be received from Ankeny for a capacity in a 24-inch feeder main, which gets us down to basically what is funded by our water revenue and water rates of $28.4 million. And again, comparing that is up about $2.5 million. It was $25.6 million funded from rates in our 2022 budget. So nice increase there to continue to fund our capital assets and our capital needs. Next slide just shows kind of where those where that budget's being spent. And as you can see, nearly $13 million in water main replacement. We've talked about that quite a bit in the last few years. So this is largely in Des Moines and Polk County. You can also see the pretty big number at the Sailorville treatment plant, those expansion projects, along with the feeder mains and the core network feeder mains of about $4 million. And then as you kind of round out this slide, you can see the departmental capital. You know, these are primarily are ongoing replacements, hydrants, valves, IT equipment, meters, water production pumps, things like that, vehicles, equipment is in that departmental capital. One more thing to point out within the IT budget, there is a $1.1 million budgeted. This is the second year of budgeting $1.1 million for the PeopleSoft replacement. So that would round out that IT budget. And, you know, the memo, the detailed memo includes a lot more details on this capital budget. So, you know, feel free to go there if you would like more details on that. It's all in there. Let me divert my phone quick. You know, and as we focused really on the outflow section of the budget, we've talked about our operating expenses, we've talked about our capital expenses, we've talked about our projects, you know, how they're being funded with debt and regional participation. This graph shows the last 5 years of outflows by those classifications. You know, and as you can see, as expected, we're seeing a gradual increase in our operating expenses, a little bit more this year than in prior years, but, you know, just a nice incline there. The green section would be the projects that are funded from water rates, water revenue, again, steadily increasing, which we like to see. We have the purple, which is the debt payments and reserves. Do recall that we did pay off our 2012 bonds in 2021, so you don't see any of the debt payments in there. And then we also have kind of rounding out this would be the other funding sources, the SRF funded capital, Des Moines Water Works debt, and the regional participation. And these all really were highlighted in our capital improvement plan, our five-year CIP that we do. So, you know, in essence, that's our starting point for building the capital budget, as well as, you know, what does that CIP tell us? We load that in. And then, of course, we tweak it based on, you know, new findings, things like that, new things that might come up. This next slide shows the multi-year capital projects. And, you know, really what we want to communicate here is that, you know, we're including capital funds in our 2023 budget, but they're for, you know, partial completion of a project. So, for example, and as I alluded to this earlier, funded with regional participation, these expansion projects, we have $24.4 million included in the 2023 budget at a total cost of about $146 million. So, you know, one thing to say, you know, these are estimates, you know, certainly as we get through the design and the RFP stage, you know, we expect these to change some. And these are also in today's dollars. But, you know, what this does is kind of give you a flavor of, you know, where we are and kind of where we're going, in essence, to see, you know, what we kind of are in total project costs. You know, and even in the funded by rate section, we have several multi-year capital projects in here that, you know, have some initial funding and maybe some initial construction and then completion in following years. One other thing I wanted to point out that there may be projects that are budgeted in 2023 that may have debt funding in later years. For example, this filter plant rehabilitation. We have $400,000 budgeted in 2023 for the initial design of that, and then $13.8 million in future years that we may fund through Des Moines Water Works debt. So we may take out debt in order to fund that. You know, we'll have to see that, cross that bridge when we get there. Certainly SCADA would be another candidate for that type of funding, you know, initially out of Des Moines Water Works rates, and then, you know, looking at perhaps potentially debt down the road. So, you know, I just want to remind you again, this document, the budget memo, contains a lot of details, not only in the main part of the document, but also in the back, where every work plan, both operating and capital, show the 2023 budgeted expenses versus the 2022 budget comparisons. And really, those are the highlights of the 2023 budget. I know I went through that hopefully fairly quickly. You know, being part of the finance team, I think all I do really is roll up the numbers and try to put some words to them, of course, with the help of some very smart friends in the utility. But I think it goes without saying that we have a lot going on here at Des Moines Water Works, and that is going to continue well into 2023. So before I take questions, if there are any, I just want to remind you of what's coming up next, at least as far as the budget goes. The budget actually goes on a different path than rates. The rates will come up into the October board meeting for action for approval on those rates, but the budget goes down a little bit differently. At the October board meeting, the action item is to set the public hearing for November's board meeting, and then November's action item would be to approve the budget. So just kind of wanted to remind you of, you know, kind of the next steps along those lines. And I think with that, I'll open it up for questions. Is everybody away?
I think so. Thank Michelle. Thanks for your presentation and for trying to get through it quickly, being mindful of our time. I appreciate that. I'm sure you covered this. It maybe just escaped my understanding. I'm looking at the Sailorville expansion. Is that a project that we would see over multiple years in the budget, I assume?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And let me go to this screen. So the expansion, both the treatment side and the raw water side. So as you can see, we have, you know, I'm just going to go to 24.4. You know, we have a little bit of some feeder main costs in here, you know, but in total, those expansion projects, you know, right now we're estimating to be at 54.3 million on the raw water and 77 million on the plant expansion. So while there's about 20 million in this year's budget for some design, some initial, possibly some initial construction, things like that, you know, really the bulk of those projects are planned to be completed in future years.
Okay. Any questions from other board members?
You know, I mean, I don't want to jinx it, but I think with all the higher prices that we've seen on everything, Michelle, I'm not surprised to see the chemical costs. I thought gas might even be a little bit higher, but we'll just hope that it doesn't go higher than this. But thank you for the comprehensive review.
Sue.
Anything else? If not, we'll thanks again, Michelle, for the great presentation. We'll move on to Ted's comments.
Joel, I think I will just follow up with one comment, and that is this, that at the November Finance and Audit Committee meeting, we will have what we call the departmental budget presentations, which I think really puts this in a nice understandable package for the board, or at least I hope so, where we go through each department and talk a little bit about what's different year over year from 2022 to 2023 in terms of the budget that resulted in some of what you saw today. It's you know, shorter and more focused on change, but I think it's very informative, and some of it is obviously will be a repeat. You'll see that chemical costs went up again, but you get a little bit more of a flavor of just what has changed. And so encourage the board to participate in next month's finance and audit if you're available. And I think I'll leave it at that unless there are questions.
Hearing none, I'll move on to our final item, public comments. If any members of the public would like to comment.
I don't see any online. Michelle, do you have anyone in person?
All right, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
All right, thanks all.
Thank you.